This is Circulating Ideas, episode number 258. My name is Steve Thomas, and my guest today is Max Brallier, the author of the new book, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains, which is a spinoff of the Last Kids on Earth series, and the newest book in that series, the ninth book, is The Last Kids on Earth and the Monster Dimension. Circulating Ideas is brought to you with support from listeners just like you. Find out how you can help support the show by going to circulatingideas.com/support. Max, welcome to Circulating Ideas.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
So we're mostly going to talk about the books here, but whenever I have authors on, I like to talk about a little bit of library stuff. The library has come up a couple of times in the series. One of the evil books was checked out from, I guess, the evil section of the library to give the one of the main villains some of her plans. What kind of experience did you have with libraries growing up, and how do you work with them today as an author?
Growing up, I had a really good public library in my town. I grew up mostly in New England, outside of Boston, and cool, like early 1900s, big old building. And it was awesome. I loved it. There was like a period in middle school where I would ride my bike there after school and hang out for like hours. I would read, I'd run around and get into a little bit of trouble. Like, it was like, you could like go like down weird stacks and talk to a girl you had a crush on or something. Also, like, I was really into story, like story in general, and movies back at that age, in middle school. And I would go and use the internet and like just like I would read the interviews with directors and stuff and print them all out for hours. It was like a second a better school for a while. Mm-hmm. The library is great. And I remember the moment we moved, like maybe third grade, fourth grade, and going in and my mom taking me to the library. It wasn't the first time, but the first time I sort of like got it. And I was like, how many books can I get? And they were like, you can take out as many as you want. And I was like, what? And I had this like massive stack, this absurd stack. The library is like a really important, not just for the books, but just like the place itself too. It was a combination, which is one of the things that makes them so great. Just recently I did an event with the library in Arlington, Texas, outside of Dallas. I've been doing more library events recently. They're great because like I do a lot of school events, virtual and in person. Then I tour the region of books twice a year. I go on the road for about 3 weeks each time. It's mostly school events, but recently it's been more library stuff, which is nice because then you sort of get the whole community as opposed to a school event, which is really nice. Also nice as an author because then you get to see like how people wanted to come see you, not how people just had second period while you're there.
Right.
Which is sometimes great and sometimes really depressing.
Yeah. And it's really great now because especially with the spinoff series you're doing here with the comics, is that comics are so much more in libraries now than they were even a couple decades ago. They're so much more popular. And again, reading is reading. And so just whatever's going to get kids to read, that's great. So
yeah, I know. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm picturing in my head right now, like the comic section in my library growing up, and it was very small and it was a weird collection, like weird jumble of things that didn't go together for any reason, except for they had paneled art on them. And then like Mouse was on its own little section that whatever. It's like, this one is art. So one of the nice things about doing Last Comics on Earth as a spinoff to Last Kids on Earth is that the paneled art, like the comic book style art, I hope reaches a different readership, a different audience. Kids who are hesitant, reluctant to read something. Even Last Kids is not like a traditional novel because it's heavily illustrated, right. A hybrid, illustrated novel, whatever you want to call it. So it's nice to sort of have that in addition. Oh, okay, not for you. How about this? Which is just really nice. I still do hope that those kids end up reading prose books as well. Reading is reading, but there's also the thing when you're taking what you're reading on the page and visualizing it in your head and forming that stuff that I think makes it sort of special. Like we'd be sitting each reading the same book and we have totally different images in our head. But at the same time, we have the image that the author wanted to give us, but it's different. That's what I love so much. I'm a huge audiobook person. Like I used to read audiobooks and I kind of rediscovered them, but I was like spending too much money on them because they're so expensive. But then when someone was like, try Libby, and I was like, all right, I don't have to go to like the library and get like a CD. This is great. And then I've been like just plowing through audiobooks. It's just sort of the same thing where it's like a little bit of a graphic novel thing where it's like you then get the reader's voice in there. They determine the rhythm a little bit in a way. It's always interesting when it's the author reading it, and then you know exactly what they had in mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Because even if it's a really good reader, they're interpreting it in their own way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's the same kind of if you read a graphic novel version or see a movie version of something first, and it's like, oh no, now I have a different version in my head. Like there's lots of stories that I can remember that I read first and then saw the movie. And sometimes you're like, I guess that's okay, but that's not what was in my head.
I remember going to the movies. I think I was a senior in high school when Harry Potter came out. And I was like, oh, that's how you say Hermione. I had it all wrong.
Yeah, for pronunciations, it can be helpful. There's actually a few of your characters, some of the monsters and stuff. Sometimes I'm like, I have no idea what
they're pronunci- Oh, yeah. No, there's been times where like I realized that the spelling of the character, the monster Gazette, and I was saying it in my head a way that is totally not spelled. And there's no reason that it would be that. Because I just said it away, and then I think I typed it in a way that wasn't that way, and it went all the way, so now it's what it is. Whenever they record the audiobooks, they usually send me over like 8-10 words of like, what is this? And I phonetically do it.
So I guess I'll take that opportunity to say, how do you say the main villain of the series?
Rezzak. Rezzak the Ancient. Destructor Overworld. What did I say? Yeah.
Okay. It's always hard because the font's different too, and it's like, am I supposed to be saying like with an accent? Or? So before we get too much into it, can you give just listeners the basic overview, sort of, I guess, the Last Kids on Earth series first, and then what the last comic series within that series is?
Sure. So The Last Kids on Earth is a illustrated novel series. So it's a mixture of text, prose, and illustration. Book 9 just came out. Really, there's like about 13 books because there's a book 5.5 and a book 7.5. I call them side quests. So it's told from the first person perspective from the main character, Jack. And he has a pretty strong like voice. And so I wanted to focus on the other character. And so that's why they're half numbers. So it's about basically these four kids, Jack Salt, the main character, and then his friends, June, Quentin, Dirk. In the first book, there's a monster zombie apocalypse that comes from another dimension and hits our world, and they have to survive it. But the point of it, like the big idea behind it, is that it's fun. Like it's not a sad, gray, depressing sort of thing. When I write it, I'm always looking at it, especially with the first one where it was like establishing the world. Like me, when I was watching end of the world movies as a kid or reading graphic novels like that and being like, I know this is really serious, but it looks really fun as a kid to be like, oh, wait, there's no parents, there's no rules. In that situation in real life, sure, different, but like as a setting for a big fictional adventure, oh, cool. I can drink all the soda I want. I can play video games at 5 a.m. with my best friend and I'm only 12 years old. That's amazing. And so they battle and survive against zombies and monsters. And then as the series goes on, it gets bigger and becomes more of a big epic quest thing. Starting around book 5, it shifts. And now they're zeroing in towards the end game. So then The Last Comics on Earth is a spinoff. The second book comes out in April. And it's full color graphic novel, different illustrator. Jay Cooper illustrates it in a sort of kid style because the idea behind it is, what would these four kids, Jack, June, Quentin, Dirk, do when they have a downtime during the end of the world? But well established in the series, they love comics, and Jack, the main character, thinks in a sort of comic booky way. So they write and draw their own comics. And that's what we're reading. They imagine themselves as sort of strange, goofy, weird superheroes. Very much like what I did with my friends when I was a kid. I think what a lot of kids do now. I feel like even more now. Like when I go to schools and I'm like, raise your hand if like you ever write and draw with your friends together and you make stuff together. And I feel like it's more of a thing than it was even when I was a kid, which is great. So yeah, it's like this big, bright, colorful world with these kids writing and drawing and imagining themselves as superheroes fighting the bad guys and sort of making fun of each other while they do it in the text.
Yeah. And like you said, the regular series is as lighthearted as you can make it when it's about the end of the world. But then this is like even another level of that because then it's their imagination. So there's even a higher level of goofiness.
That's really like one of the things that I want to say. It's silly and it's weird. And there are way less rules than The Last Kids on Earth. It's a big world with monsters and zombies. No, it's not really magic per se, but there's a lot of stuff going on. But I still have like a sort of set of rules that I try to follow. And as the series goes on, it gets a little like more serious as the characters are growing up and stakes get more real. Also, I was just sort of figuring out as I was going in the beginning, and then I kind of together a claim when I realized I think I get to do at least four more than I know where I want to take this. So part of it was also that I began writing Last Kids. I didn't have a kid of my own, but now I have a daughter who's 6. And so we started reading stuff that I hadn't read. Like we read Dog Man together and we read 13 Story Treehouse together. I love comics. I love superhero stuff. And I was like, trying. I like it. You're going to like it too. And so we're going to enjoy this together, which is great, which four, because she would listen. Now she doesn't care what dad likes at all, which is also great, but still, really? I'm not going to watch Star Wars? She's like, nope.
Yeah, it's funny when you try to put your own fandoms onto your kids and it's like, come on, this is really good.
It's like, yeah, right. In the beginning, it worked so much and whatever. But now it's like, no, we're off in this one. So we read stuff that was really silly and goofy and funny. And it was so much fun to see what makes her laugh and stuff like that. And like what things get her excited or like, that's weird. So I wanted to try to write something that was goofy and silly in a way that was very different, but still within the same sort of universe.
Right. Yeah. For all the fantasy elements, the regular series is more grounded, whereas this one, again, you have a zombie character basically that just takes off his hand and goes, whoop, oh, there we go. I mean, it's very funny, but it's like that wouldn't happen in the regular series because that just wouldn't work. Do you find it hard sometimes to balance the general darkness of the setting that you have in the series, in the regular series, against keeping that light tone? Because like, you do touch on it every once in a while, you know, that they miss their families and things. Those keep coming up, but is it difficult ever for you to keep that tone, that balance right?
Always. I think that's one of the harder things is finding the right balance and striking it always. Especially in the beginning, like the first book was a whole long process going from I had the idea to then getting it published because like a lot of the feedback I got from an agent and publishers was like, the concept, the world is too sad for this fun narrator that I desperately wanted to publish the series. So like I went and I changed the whole thing and I made it the portal story. I went back and forth between like an end of the world version of their hometown and their actual hometown. It was much different. And I finished it forever. And I was agonized over it and didn't like it, but it was done. And then I actually went the last minute, I went back and I said, basically, can I try that original version? I think I can make it work. Because there's thinking of like stuff, you know, I love growing up, movies like the Goonies, they're being shot at. And there's like 15 different times they almost die. There's big stuff happening. And I mean, every Disney movie opens up with some parent dying, you know? And so I thought there was a way to balance it. So yeah, and it's gotten harder as the series has gone on to balance trying to find like, okay, this is something that's like, this part is fun, action, adventure. This part is still relatable to a kid. This is like finding something like celebrating a birthday, but like doing it at the end of the world with just your friends, stuff like that. Finding those things that are relatable touchstones and then twisting them and putting them in this end of the world, just your buddies situation, and also adding this monstrous element. I think my favorite of all of them, if I pulled it out, is the third book. I think that was the one where I best balance those things. I often get to the end of the manuscript and I'm like, it needs some sort of fun runner because it's too dark, or the other way around, or it's like a long stretch of just not feeling true to some version of how the characters would feel, because there is still a lot of heart in it. It's not just like silly. Yeah, we can do whatever we want. Like that's part of it, but it's also how they're dealing with it. Yeah. And on that becomes kind of more evident. There's more focus on finding their parents and who's out there and all that stuff.
The food is still very much we can do whatever we want, though. They're always still just eating Cheetos and drinking whatever soda and whatever they want.
Yeah, which is like backfire to me. Like, I remember like maybe like 6 years ago, around book five, like, doing school visits and being like, and what do? First thing they do, they eat nothing but Cheetos and Hostess cupcakes and they play video games all day. And then like I wait for kids to be like, yeah, that's great. And they're like, that's not really healthy. Like, that's not a good. And I'm like, what? Kids are different these days, which is, yeah, it's good to know you probably shouldn't do that. But I was like, even now I would do that. But yeah, there's things like that where I'm like, yeah, you could just go and you get every bag of chips and mix it all together. And like, that's too many carbs for in one sitting. That's the one where it backfired on me. But yeah, the food is fun. It's also fun visually for gags and cutaway type jokes where it's like, this is like a monstrous meal. Like, what's the monsters eat? Except to eat it. They always kind of go back to that food well.
Yeah, I think you even have a joke in the newest one about that of like, oh, well, the kids of our generation like to eat healthy things, but one of the villains is giving them something that looks healthy, but then it turns them into
monsters. Oh, yeah. I shown a light on it, whatever it's called, lampshaded it, because the kids, they're eating some sort of weird pizza stuff that's getting like turned into something else.
Turning them into barnacles or something, I think.
Yeah, like weird monstrous sea creatures. Yeah.
How did you get connected with Joshua Pruitt, who writes the comic spinoff series?
Josh was a writer on the Netflix series. That's how I met him. We had 5-6 writers on it. We became buddies and he became a sort of good go-to person that would bounce ideas off of for The Last Kids. Like, I'm stuck on this thing. It just feel right. And I always like the way you think. A lot of the same touchstones. And he's super, super, super into comics and he's fun to write with. So when I sort of started thinking about this, I was like, it'd be fun to do this with somebody else because the thing I least like about being a writer is all the time I spend alone writing. Oh, it'd be great. We'll just like sit in a room together and write. I'd be like the Van Dyke Show. And it'd be amazing. I live in LA and Josh lives in LA. And so I was like, hey, let's do this thing together since I'll make it fun. I don't know if I realized it at first, but it ended up there being a lot of moments where we were doing what the characters are doing, where it's like they're sitting there together, writing together and being like, oh yeah, well, my character has this power. Oh wait, what if we make the bad guy look like this? And we'll be sitting there like, wait, dude, it'll be awesome if the bad guy was like this. And it's like the exact same thing, which makes it, there's something in collaborating and writing a book about characters collaborating that makes, like, brings out a lot of that real stuff. And we had a feeling like, oh, we're back in like fifth grade with our friends after school, drawing and writing weird dialogue and making up rules for the characters' powers and stuff like that. So it's been super fun to be able to work with a friend.
Yeah, and speaking of the Netflix series, there's even a joke in the new book too of like how terrible it is that Netflix finds these great series and then cancels them right when they're hitting
it. Forgot we kept that in there. I think that was like a 4 a.m. joke. And they're like, oh, we'll type it and we'll get rid of it at some point. But it's still there. Yeah, I forgot we had that.
Oh, well. Throughout the regular series and then even the framing sequences in the comic series, your regular artist collaborator, Douglas Holgate, how did you first get connected with him with the series?
I got really lucky that the last kid, the art director for the series at Penguin, Jim Hoover, who's amazing. This is like over 10 years ago now. We had like our first lunch about the series when Penguin bought it. And he had a couple different portfolios with him. And one was Doug's. Doug was just perfect. So I got lucky because Jim's really great. And Doug is just fantastic. He's in Australia. So I think I've only hung out with him one time or two times. We were supposed to do a big tour, like for book 6, which is Skeleton Row, and they kind of go to cross country road trip thing. So we're going to do like a road trip thing. And that was like the year of the COVID hit, but we couldn't do it. We were going to have like 3 weeks together in the back of a monster truck, but it didn't happen. Who knows how 3 weeks together in the back of a truck would have gone. We had it in like that's the end of the series. No, but he's so awesome and so talented. He draws these monsters that are ridiculous and so cool looking. But then he also, like, a lot of people can do that. Not as good as him, but a lot of people can do that. But he draws jokes, humor. He makes jokes work visually in a way that is, I've found, not as easy to do as, I don't know why you think it was easy, but, like, there's something about it where it's, like, you see in your head and, like, okay, this is how it works. No, like, it's only funny if it's a wide shot. That's what makes it funny. And he just gets that stuff. And he's just so good at doing both. He's beyond talented.
And do you work pretty collaboratively with him? A lot of times the dialogue will continue into his art and then go back into the series. You're suggesting those or he's suggesting them or both?
The way it works is, I mean, the final product is very collaborative because, yeah, like you were saying, you can't really like just pull the art out of it. I write a series called Eerie Elementary and it's a little bit younger and every page has art, a lot of art on it, but the art's there to support. It's like for helping read, you know, it's like you're seeing it and then you're reading it at the same time. But Last Kids is more like wimpy kid where it's like the text is setting up a punchline or setting up like a big impactful moment or there's definitely images where it's like, okay, I just want to see what's happening because that's going to look cool. So I write the manuscript and in the manuscript, they have it put little boxes and I write sort of what I see in my head and I put dialogue and then Doug goes and he takes the dinky little things that I wrote for description, illustration ideas. And he makes them look amazing. And then he'll also have ones where he's like, I think this scene should be illustrated. This would look cool, illustrate it. Or I'll run over because on the second book, I realized I just kept being like, illustration, illustration, illustration. So I was like, I read the first book and it looked really great. And I was like, this is really good. I think the better part of this book is Doug's drawing, not my writing. And I was like, illustrate this part, illustrate this part, illustrate this part. It was just too many illustrations. And after my editor was like, we had to give him a new contract because you call for so many illustrations. And so they were like, here's the limit. Here's the cap. So I have to be much more picky about it. So he'll be like, this one, maybe we don't do that one. And Jim will do that through the designer and my editor will kind of figure all that stuff out. So I have usually something in my head and then Doug takes that thing that's in my head and makes it 15 times more amazing or draws something that's way different than what I saw in my head, like a creature or a world, but always like 10 times more fantastic.
He's got a great unique style too. Really impressed by it. And it's nice that he's able to work with the last comic series as well, doing the framing sequences.
Yeah.
And then set up the comic.
To have like a sort of beginning and end part where it's like, oh, here's the kids in the real world. And then we're going to go into that. And those are sort of, it's like black, white, and there's like a blue tint to it. And then it like Wizard of Oz sort of goes into the full color thing and then jump back out of it.
And I do really like the fake ads in the comics too.
Writing those is like, I bought so many old comics for research and Josh would bring over these boxes of old comics and I found out great books that are just a history of comic book ads, just full color. And then I also ended up researching like 15 different Sea Monkeys ads for the most recent one. And then I was like, I miss Sea Monkeys. I want Sea Monkeys. I like ordered Sea Monkeys. We had Sea Monkeys going. I love that old stuff. It's awesome. The writing those, like some of the parts, like I was like, this is so much fun. Just doing the fake ads. I just love that stuff.
Yeah, I was going to mention this Sea Monkey one. I won't ruin the joke for people who are going to read the book, but that was one of my favorite ones too. I think probably just from when I was a kid reading the comics and seeing all those creatures.
No, we always save like the doing the fake ads for last because it's like, okay, the book's done, the story's done. All right. And then so we also have to figure out the layout of the book and see how many we need to fill up space and how many we can fit because we wanted to do like at least six or so. So like I remember doing that Sea Monkey one at the end of the last book and it was like we had a sprint to finish the book and no sleep left. And it's like, all right, forgot we were supposed to do that tonight and then figuring it out and like, you know, middle of the night, which is perfect time to write that because it's so weird and supposed to be so weird and bizarre and silly. And yeah, looking at one screen, looking at those old ads and playing, it's fun.
And for all of you guys working on it, a lot of self-referential humor too, because there was one like, oh, we could have this Max guy, he could write it. Oh, look, he's so handsome, but no, he shouldn't do it.
Yeah, the part in the first book where you turn the page and they hit like sort of the low point at the end of act two before act three and they're stuck and like we need help and then it's like we called this guy and it's my big stupid author headshot and then no, not that guy, he has big ears, babe. And then you turn the other page and it's Doug but he's upside down because he's in Australia. I was like, this is my favorite thing I've ever written, this is so fun.
It's great. So the comic series is going to be four books, is that right?
Four to start. We finished the third one, the manuscript. And then it goes to Jay to start illustrating.
And you mentioned that the series is circling an end game. Do you have any hints or anything for readers of how many more books you think there might be?
Now I don't anymore. The big arc that kind of began in book five, this quest they've been on, there's, I think, about two more books in that. And that's going to close. And originally that was going to be the end of the series, but getting harder to say goodbye to some of this stuff. But I don't want to drag on that story. I don't want to get lousy. But the most important thing is always I don't want to get bad. So if there's a way for me to keep doing it, but still close out that story in a satisfying way, I would do that. So I'm sort of in a place of pondering right now. You caught me in like a moment of like, I don't know what's going on.
Right. But a couple more books at least there.
Yeah, for sure. The big, big showdown is right around the corner.
And we'll trust you to stick the landing there. No pressure or anything, right?
Nothing's worse than something you enjoy for years as a fan and like it all falls apart.
All right. The new book is The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. And it is available today. So go out and get a copy. Either purchase one or get one from your public library or both. Just do both. Max, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have a great day. Circulating Ideas is produced by me, Steve Thomas, in the suburbs of Atlanta. To check out new episodes as they're released, follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, or your podcast app of choice. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a rating or a review to help others find the show. Go to circulatingideas.com to hear past episodes. And if you have comments, questions, or suggestions for future episodes, you can find me on Instagram, Threads, or Mastodon at CircIdeas or on Blue Sky at Circulating Ideas. The theme song was composed by Pamela Klicka. Thank you for listening, and until the next episode, keep circulating your ideas.